Hey, good afternoon, everyone. We're looking at an article from Christianity Today. It's the cover story. It says, Why Defining Gossip Matters. Why Defining Gossip Matters in the Church's Response to Abuse. Have we tamed the tongue too much? Christians work to recover a biblical understanding of harmful hearsay versus healthy criticism. Heather Falk can't remember if she had ever heard of Dave Ramsey's no gossip policy before her husband John was fired from the Christian Financial Gurus company last month. But those inside Ramsey Solutions and the millions who follow his teachings on leadership know that he has little tolerance for negativity in the ranks. Ramsey defines gossip as discussing anything negative with someone who can't help solve the problem. Wow. Ramsey defines gossip as discussing anything negative with someone who can't help solve the problem. That means criticism has to go straight to the leadership. Complaining to fellow employees is disloyalty. People who work at Ramsey may have their gripes from little things like critiquing the guest speakers at its weekly devos to bigger worries over their place in the company, but they have to be careful not to share with fellow employees who may report them. You have a little bit of caution going into a new relationship to figure out who's a safe person, said a former employee who left this year and asked not to be named for fear of retaliation. For some, the reticence extends beyond the company. They feel like they gossip too, talking to spouses, talking to friends, said another. They know not to do what Heather Falk did. In the early months of the pandemic last year, she shared on her personal Facebook page her concerns over John's company reopening its office. A co-worker reported the three-sentence post to Ramsey Solutions, and Falk's husband was fired less than a month later. At the exit interview, Ramsey's HR director confirmed her social media post was the reason for their decision. According to a recording, her husband remarked, "We obviously disagree on the definition of gossip." After his termination, she received a cease and desist letter, so she kept her updates to Facebook friends vague, saying they could message her if they wanted to know why her husband was no longer at Ramsey. She was still processing her guilt over what happened when a female leader from her church reached out. Falk assumed she was going to offer support, and the two met on her porch. Instead, the leader challenged her recent post. If you felt like you just wanted to gossip, she said, according to Falk, Christians are right to heed scripture warning about gossip, secrets, and lies. Yet the American church has also seen a pattern of leaders referenced in such teaching to silence and discredit victims and whistleblowers. One of the earliest team members at Ravi Zacharias Ministry to raise concerns internally was its founder's behavior abroad was penalized for spreading rumors. Women who brought accusations of sexual misconduct against Willow Creek Community Church founder Bill Hybels were said to have a campaign to take down the church with false allegations. In the decades since releasing his book, Resisting Gossip, a pastor, Matthew Mitchell, has noticed the pattern too. 2 years ago, Mitchell wrote in a blog post that he worried controlling leaders would use his work to shoot down critics within their churches. As the hashtag MeToo, hashtag ChurchToo movement have brought victims' perspectives to the forefront, Mitchell told CT he's had more opportunities to consider how hard it is to speak up and speak out when you've been mistreated by someone in authority and then to have to add pressure of being accused of gossiping. The instinct to malign those who raise concerns can be a red flag for a culture of abuse. Wow. But the answer, Mitchell and others experts agree, is not for the church to stop preaching and teaching against the danger of gossip. Instead, it must start with the right understanding of gossip in the first place. Someone else.
William Vanderbloom, whose company consults with Christian employers around hiring and workplace culture, says more of his clients are adding no gossip clauses to their handbooks, particularly as social media gives people a greater reach to broadcast potentially damaging information. To enforce the rules, they have to navigate the subjective borders of what counts as gossip or establish parameters for the term from the start. Just calling it a prayer concern does not keep it from being gossip. That's how it gets missed, said Vanderblumen, a former pastor in Houston. Gossip in Matthew 18. The Bible doesn't offer us a single definition and uses multiple words to refer to what we call gossip. In the Old Testament, the terms typically refer to a person as a talebearer or a secret dealer rather than an action, according to Karen Amon, a Proverbs 31 ministry speaker and the author of Keep It Shut. The New Testament terms for gossip, she says, refer to babbling empty speech, 1 Timothy 6:20, and whispers, 2 Corinthians 12:20. We've gotten this concept somewhere of talking behind someone's back is gossip. But maybe it is, maybe it isn't, said Amon, who spent 5 years studying scriptural guidance on speech to curb her own habit of getting into trouble with words. If it is true, and I'm not doing it in the slanderous or malicious way, that isn't really gossip. That's just speaking of someone when they're not in the room. For Christians, gossip is not so much a category of speech as a motivation to speak. Sometimes gossip is fueled by our own selfishness and false worship. We want attention and to be seen as the ones in the know. Sometimes it's an unloving motivation towards others, a desire to misrepresent them, or to reveal a secret that would hurt their reputation. Calling any negative or sensitive information gossip misses the point. Sometimes we have to tell someone else something bad that we know to be true, that someone's about someone that's not there to warn them about that person, because it's likely that they will be hurt in the same way, said Mitchell, citing Paul's line in 2 Timothy 4 about the harm done by Alexander the metalworker. Paul wrote, "You too should be on your guard against him because he strongly opposed our message," verse 15. As part of a move toward better transparency, trust, and accountability, Christian institutions are more carefully considering whether they've offered avenues for those who rightly want to speak up to tell the truth, call out sin, and protect others from harm. In some ways, remote work during COVID-19 forced Christian employers to communicate more clearly and build more trust. According to Al Lopez, CEO of the Best Christian Workplaces Institute, Christian churches, ministries, and companies want to create a positive workplace culture where employees are expected to demonstrate the fruits of the Spirit, but that doesn't mean avoiding negativity entirely. We encourage our ministry partners to create an environment where people feel free to express their opinions, said Lopez, adding that open communication also makes organizations more innovative. There is such a thing as healthy conflict when people disagree around issues and ideas. Christians routinely get labeled as gossipers for discussing someone else's sinful behavior without going to them directly, per Matthew 18. I've thought about that gossip accusation a lot, said Sandra Glan, who helped a former church care for a string of women coming forward with stories of sexual abuse and harassment on the part of its deacons. When one factors in the power differential, a more directly applicable guide is the first epistle to Timothy, where the apostle tells his protege, "Do not entertain an accusation against an elder unless it's brought by two or three witnesses. But those elders who are sinning, you are to reprove them before everyone, so that the others may take warning," 1 Timothy 5:19 and 20. Addressing abuse by leaders in church settings should involve other people rather than make a victim meet with their alleged abuser one-on-one. The two or three have to have a conversation before confronting. That conversation is not gossip, Glenn said. The two or three might also need to consult spiritual counsel. That widens the circle further. That convo also is not gossip. Not only are such conversations permissible, but they also represent a form of accountability. We've seen, particularly in the past several years, powerful people able to harm others. Sometimes over the course of many years, and get away with it, in part because the victims were isolated and unaware of each other, in part because the organization protected its leaders from appropriate criticism, said Stephen Whitmer, a Massachusetts pastor who has written about gossip in the church. Who gets brought into the circle is important, whether raising up major concerns or just small critiques. Christians should seek out somebody who can do more than hearing their venting. When we speak to a third party about a problem we perceive in someone, we should consider that third party an involved participant, not a passive recipient, and accordingly choose them carefully, Whitmer said. Perhaps they'll help us think through what to say when we approach the person. Perhaps they'll go with us to speak to the person. They shouldn't simply be the recipient of our venting. For victims who have kept their experiences quiet out of fear, who have ruminated and worried and blamed themselves to the point that they're at the end of their spiritual rope, that small, trusted group of listeners can be a lifeline. It can also reveal evidence of a pattern of abuse, a simultaneously heartbreaking and comforting realization that despite the isolation they felt in silence, they're not alone. When they call it gossip, when they don't allow for processing and unpacking, there's no chance for anyone to understand what is happening to them, said Melissa Hogan, one of more than a dozen former Ramsey Solution employees and spouses who spoke to CT. You need that. You need people around you. In other words, it's not just the boss or HR who can steward your concerns well. It's also the person next to you who can listen or say, me too. Hogan's ex-husband, Chris Hogan, was one of the top personalities at Ramsey Solutions. The company oversaw a restoration process when the couple had a marital difficulty stemming from his affairs. Dave Ramsey told his staff in 2019 that Melissa Hogan came to him and angrily accused Chris of doing all sorts of things. Then the company stood by Chris during what Ramsey said was a nasty divorce. Chris Hogan left in March over actions and behavior that weren't in line with Ramsey Solutions' core values. Melissa Hogan says it's a whole God thing, that she connected with a circle of five women years ago through the company's wives club around the time of her divorce. Hogan felt that she couldn't open up to them due to a gag order from Ramsey. Now they're her support system, swapping messages on the app Voxer, studying spiritual abuse together, and raising awareness in hopes that others can escape manipulative environments. Wade Mullen, the author of Something's Not Right, Decoding the Hidden Tactics of Abuse and Freeing Yourself from Its Power, describes how abusive and toxic organizations fear the collective actions that can arise when someone tells another what happened to them and realizes they aren't the only one. One form of retaliation is when leaders respond to exposure by misrepresenting the truth teller's moral and ethical reasons for telling others, casting them as bitter and revengeful persons who are just spreading rumors. In some cases, I've seen religious leaders attribute disclosures of abuse to satanic efforts to destroy the work of God. They label the disclosures as gossip and then argue the gossip, and by extension the gossiper, is being used by the devil himself to attack the church or ministry. Lopez at Best Christian Workplaces says working in a Christian environment is the one place where people can bring their whole selves to work. As a result, employees can develop deeper connections with the people they work with and hold leadership to higher expectations. Even in cases of workplace mismanagement, they then have spiritual ramifications, spurring people to blame themselves or to begin to resent Christian leaders who they believe don't represent the heart of Jesus. So speak out of truth and love and justice.
This is a very long article.
It is.
Oh, yeah.
Some Christian resources are angled toward helping pastors protect themselves and their churches from gossip or slander, which Vanderblumen is becoming a greater threat in an age of cancel culture and salacious stories gone viral on social media. Now that everyone's their own broadcast network, that might be kind of a new wrinkle since gossips are an old phenomenon, he said. While scripture counts direct people to call out leaders' sin before the church, there was no means of doing so instantly before crowds beyond their community, and leaders didn't have the global reach of today's popular pastors, authors, and ministry heads. I know there are some really bad case studies of this person didn't get to speak up because they thought they'd lose their job, and it turns out the guy had been somewhat of a sexual predator for years and years and years. I know those stories are out there, so I don't want to take away from those, he said. But I also know that the power of gossip is higher than ever. You can ruin a person's life with zero truth. Vanderblumen said that over the past 5 years, non-disparagement clauses, which have typically been part of severance agreements, are expanding to apply to family members as well as a way to ward off gossiping, speculation, and insults on social media. He says in most cases, mistakes have been made on both sides, and such agreements allow churches to move on without having to hash out the conflict in public. From a legal standpoint, the agreements are meant to protect people on both ends from liability. A former employer won't come out and criticize the departing staff member for the way things ended if the employee and their family agree to do the same. But the attention toward churches and ministries use non-disparagement clauses and non-disclosure agreements has raised concerns over hiding misconduct. Vanderblumen clarified that a good NDA will always include some language that says if something criminal has come up, you have absolutely every right to bring it up, allowing people to report mismanagement of funds, mistreatment, or sexual harassment. Churches, too, have been silenced over non-disparagement policies. It took a new law in Texas, passed in the wake of the Southern Baptist abuse crisis, for churches there to be able to disclose, without liability, to potential employers the reason a former employee or volunteer was asked to leave. Karen Amon said, giving your honest opinion when you're asked about somebody for a work reference is not gossip, but rather helpful information targeted at someone who would need to know. But what about revealing potentially damaging information for all of your social media followers, or all of the internet to see? Some make the case that leaders who have abused their power are held to a higher standard, and because of their influence should be addressed in the public, even if they had repented. Glenn recalls the 1 Timothy teaching to call out the sinful elders before everyone as a warning. But our motivations and the postures of our hearts are factors in whether we've resorted to gossip in such cases too. Mitchell cautions everyone, victims and onlookers, against seeing the drama in such conflicts in the quest to take down a leader as a source of amusement. The vulnerable still need to be careful with how they talk about the powerful, and it's no excuse for taking the low road, he said. Even the abused need to speak out of truth and love and justice and not for a desire for revenge or desire to grumble or even entertainment. As a Christian focused on gossip, Mitchell does hear from pastors whose churches have been split by gossip. But the reason you want to rid your church of gossip is to make a healthy place for the flock, he says, not so the pastor doesn't have to deal with criticism. That's backwards in Christian leadership. And the one who is higher is called to do more stooping. And that might mean taking more hits if you want without fighting back. But that's the joy of Christian leadership, said Mitchell, who has pastored Ling's Evangelical Free Church in Pennsylvania for the last 23 years. Pastors are bound to face pushback and whispers in the pews, a year of mask requirements and contentious restrictions on gatherings, if anything demonstrated that. But they have to decide when to let a comment slide and when to follow up. Over my years as a pastor, I have heard gossipy criticisms about myself. I've usually heeded the advice of Charles Spurgeon that pastors should have one blind eye and one deaf ear, and should turn that blind eye and deaf ear towards gossips, said Whitmer, lead pastor of Pepperell Christian Fellowship. I've ignored the secondhand reports of anonymous dissatisfaction or asked the one reporting the criticism to direct those folks to have a person-to-person conversation with me. For Heather Folk in Tennessee, the suggestion of a former church leader and friend that she was trying to stir up further gossip about Ramsey still stings. I was just thinking about how damaging that was, said Folk, looking ahead to the anniversary of her husband's firing. She has come to see herself as a victim of trauma, still reeling from her husband's sudden firing and the fear of further reprisal as she speaks out. The Folks are now at a new congregation, having connected with a small group to watch online worship during the pandemic. She's been able to have regular conversations with the pastors and staff about the sensitivities of caring well for victims. We're so ingrained to say these spiritual things that are really abusive things, Folks said. It looks pretty because they put a Bible verse on it. But now I'm like, no, I don't think that's what that means. All right.
That was good.
Was that a 4-minute read?
Where are we at? 20 minutes?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
That is it.
I was only present for about half of it.
I just wonder to what degree they think that the comprehensive of what their art, you know, like the overarching message of their art, because it was just such a series of things. I don't really know.
Yeah, it really seems like there's at least two layers of, it could have been two articles. But, you know, that doesn't lend itself to the whole topic, because the topic and the title of the article is defining gossip and then why that matters and how churches respond to abuse. And so it's like, hey, let's define gossip and let's talk about how Christians define gossip.
We could do part one today and then next week read the article again and then do part two.
Or we could just replay the recording. But I mean, it's still, I mean, you know, it addresses several things that we've dealt with. I mean, here in our ministry, just you know, you had to send out an email the other week that there are, I'll say, rumblings, you know, from pews about what people might perceive, and it's just, you know, churches as a whole, it's okay. Well, we have to send someone to go talk to that person if you have an issue.
I think Brian, that's the element that they're trying, that the article tried to delineate, is that there are certain things that, due to the confidentiality nature, you may need someone to help you cope with it to gain the confidence to be able to go forward. And then there are things that should be handled, Matthew 18:1-1, because they're not these major physical or emotional, psychologically damaging things. So two extremes would be, you know, the essence of, hey, did you see so-and-so's Facebook post? Can you believe the way they're dressed? Probably should be, if you have a concern, you should go to that person instead of sharing it with your
neighbor. So is that gossip?
I think it is.
I wasn't really sure with the article, to be honest. The way it was written, it was really hard for me to follow.
It seemed like there were a couple different, you know, like trying to narrow down where the author stood.
Right.
Like where would they have fallen, you know, right. Sift it all out, where do they stand?
But the author was showing that there's differences in interpretations of that by the Ramsey's Corporation and then also members of that.
And then there's the, hey, do you think we should change this policy? What do you think, you know? This has been really bugging me. Should we approach leadership to change this policy? Would that be gossip? I don't think that's gossip. Dave Ramsey might disagree,
mm-hmm.
from what I understand.
Depending if that person yeah. can help the
well,
problem.
Well, that's what I'd love to know about that. The Ramsey issue is how much dirty laundry was aired out about that whole, I can't believe my husband's company is opening back up. Like, is that all she said? Enough that, you know, that was enough for the, you know, that corporation to terminate her husband, but...
Evidently it is, because we had a company here in Fayetteville doing it. If you post about it, talk about it, complain to a coworker about it, express any displeasure in it, you will be immediately terminated when they opened up from COVID. And that's a business leader here. Then you got the other piece where it's like, hey, my daughter had X, Y, or Z done to her, you know, by a guy in the youth group, you know, when they were back there together. Man, do you think I should go and approach? I don't think that's gossip. Because of the confidential nature of it.
Seeking but, counsel idea.
Right. So that's, I think that's what they're trying to say is there needs to be some kind of definitive understanding from people to understand this would be considered gossip, this would not, kind of deal, because you don't want everything landing in your lap from a person's social media post all the way up to whatever.
Yeah, I just don't know to what degree that the article is helpful. Like, I'm not sure I really... Because it seems like they were rebutting Dave Ramsey's ministry for their hard stand. Is that fair?
That is fair.
Yeah.
What is a little bit... I'm not a great English person, so I don't want to go as far as to say poorly written, but in my mind, what seems a little non-sequitur is the fact that the title and it seems the scope of the article was connecting this tension between reporting abuse and gossiping. Or reporting abuse from leadership in the church and gossiping, but then they went and pulled an example from, first of all, a parachurch organization that wasn't even... Dave Ramsey's group is not a church.
Right.
or Rabbi Zacharias' ministry.
Right. And I would be very cautious.
But
well,
They did mention Hybels.
Right. So, and they basically, but the Dave Ramsey thing was about, I'm sure, about some idea about how they should do stuff in the business, in the what the ministry or business, whatever you want to call it. It's a business, okay? And there was a disagreement about either how he was treated or what the policy was, and that was aired outside. It's a little different to me than something like reporting sexual abuse. It doesn't seem like it's on the same playing field. I get kind of the small connection in the fact that there's this tension, because you obviously don't want an employee that all they ever do is go around and just run their mouth negatively. So I can see where Dave Ramsey's coming, because there are people like that. You know, they're just never happy about anything, and you wonder, why in the world did I ever hire this person?
Right?
Why are they still coming here?
Right.
But then we certainly, as the article says, have heard of organizations where there's a big cover-up, and the pastor's been covered up over and over and over, and there's this whole loyalty, good old boy system where, you know if you speak out, you're going to lose whatever job you have there. So I get the tension, but I'm not sure I understand the connection between the title and the example of Dave Ramsey. Other than that, that's the only one they could find real quickly that was well-known.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you have a ditch on both sides, maybe. The article's hit.
There's also that element that was mentioned about the whole, you know, like, I have a prayer request, you know, guising gossip under the flag of please pray about this, which is also, you know, a conversation that needs to be had, where people need to be aware of, you know, please pray for, Jonathan, because, you know, he's really being really unkind to me or whatever. You know, we like to, you know, flavor things that way, because now all of a sudden we're being spiritual about it. And it's like, oh, well, as long as we're praying about it, I can tell you whatever you need to know. But we also need to at least recognize that, you know, the Ramsey organization's policy of gossip is defined about talking to someone else, you know, about an issue that they can't necessarily help with. I need to go back and look, but I didn't also use the word negative.
Yes.
Right. So discussing anything negative with someone who can't help solve the problem, which I don't necessarily have a problem with that. Even with your mention of it, Dr. Farmer, of if you're going to go to someone, hey, this was an issue and I need help resolving this. And maybe I have to go to, you know, Dr. Wilson and say, hey, you've known Dr. Farmer much longer than I have. How do I go and approach him with this so that I can handle this? Because I don't think that violates this policy. Now, airing it out on Facebook of, does anyone out there know Dr. Farmer well enough, because I have this problem with him? It's completely different. I'm still discussing it with someone else, but my objective is, I'm not looking to rally the troops and support and let's start an anti-farmer organization. I'm going to someone and saying, I need assistance, I need wisdom, I need someone who's not as effective or hot-headed about this issue or, you know, as emotionally charged as I am to help me guide through this process. Or, if we're going to talk abuse, a woman who may not feel comfortable enough going and speaking to someone alone about this particular issue that came up.
And to put it in that perspective, too, I would hate to think that any one of us around the table would handle it like some other church organizations have, where you have a person who's coming forward to confront, and they want to confront the highest person of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And they go to the number two. And the number two, and they take somebody with them, like that person that said, I know him, let's go talk to him, I'll stand with you. Mm-hmm. And they tell that person, y'all need to stop gossiping, you have nothing to do with it, it's not your complaint, you go ahead and come in here, and this charge has been made against you, you two talk it out the Matthew 18 way, and now this person is facing the predator who preyed on him. Which is exactly what happened at Trinity, mm-hmm. down in Jacksonville. And that number two became the senior pastor, and that's why they're still going through issues, and that's why in the last year a book has been released, Hammond Boulevard, the pedophile's paradise.
Wow.
Hmm. When Jacksonville decided to put in an exit that on the interstate that goes right into Hammond Boulevard. And it's that kind of things that take place. And the idea of it was they didn't want people talking and finding out that it's more prevalent because they didn't want it to harm the ministry and things of that nature. So I see tones of that in this article. So I agree with the premise that it needs to be defined, and defining it matters. I'm just not sure that this article ever really defined anything.
Well, in this, there's the whole other matter of the heart.
Right.
Because, you know, I know an individual that, you know them well enough to know that when they're talking about this, they're trying to get at solving a problem or whatever. And then, we all know somebody who's just well known
fishing
for being...
fishing for information.
Well known for being the person who wants to talk about everything, the gossip, what we would call gossip. And,
The tale bearer.
And the reality is that because of your regular demonstration of your heart, you either gain credibility or you lose credibility. So therefore, if same thing when you're accused of something, if, say for instance, I was accused of being disorganized, there would be very little doubt that that could possibly happen, but if I was accused of being, in someone's face yelling and being unkind, that might carry with it just a little bit more doubt because it just doesn't happen as often. And so the reality is that the heart itself, I think, defines to a certain extent in whether it's gossip or not. And also, we know that people sin in the middle of, when you get worked up, say you suddenly find out that the guy your husband working with, who's underneath him, who's lazy as the day is long, he makes twice as much as your husband. A wife is going to be upset about that. That doesn't seem right. Mm-hmm. So what happens next is very important. She may just fly off the handle, and she may just tell her friend, "Well, I can't believe this." But then, after you do that, you have that kind of response, or maybe someone comes to you and they criticize you of something. Our first immediate response, humanly speaking, is always kind of to be defensive. And then later on, you think about it a little bit. Well, maybe there's a little bit something to what this person is telling me. And then you've had time to think about it, and you kind of cool off, and you think about it. And so, I think, obviously, the most important thing on both sides of the thing is that people just need to think about what you say before you say it. Even though your knee-jerk reaction is to want to respond. But I also think that in the church, we do have a fear, a good healthy fear of going, "Hey, Jack, I understand where you're coming from, but I think that maybe we just should stop talking about this because this sounds like it's crossing that boundary of gossip."
Oh, yeah, we definitely have a fear of doing that to people.
We don't like to call people out in that way.
Not at all.
I mean, and so I don't know if it's really 100% always to lay it on the blame of some kind of culture in the administration that they want to just squelch everything. It's just everybody has a natural tendency to not
avoid
want
confrontation.
Right.
Yeah, sometimes it's just an awkward situation. You're thinking, how do I get out of this? Yeah.
Right.
Well, and then, Jack, you kind of mentioned it a few minutes ago when you were talking about you didn't want to harm the organization. I think too often we, as Christians, since that's kind of who this article is targeted toward on Christianity Today, that we're more concerned about what harm it does to the organization than we are what harm it does to the cause or the body of Christ. We're too concerned about how we may or may not lose our jobs because of loss of income or loss of revenue through our ministry, as opposed to what's this going to do to the message of the gospel. Hmm. I think it's well known, the whole Ravi Zacharias scandal. What would have happened if back when the very first accusation or the first, assistant or someone got wind of it, that they finally said,
that's it, we're stopping this right now. I understand we might close down the organization. I understand I might lose my job, but it's more important that this man be stopped, or that these choices or these words or whatever situation
if
we're
this
talking
is
about,
true.
That this gets stopped now so that it does not become detrimental to the cause of Christ. Because we're just too concerned about whether or not we're going to get paid.
Yeah, and I also think that there's a certain element of pride. Pride, you know, pride does so much damage to the church in honestly fixing conflicts because, you know, the whole idea of being judged, you know, for a sin or something that I have. So things are covered up. They're not confessed. People aren't willing to go and confront someone because, you know, what are they going to think about me? Now every time I see them in the hallway, I'm going to be the guy that called them out on this, that, or the other. And, I confess I'm not good at that either. And the reality is that if we cared more, Brian, about the health of the body of Christ, we would do on both sides. We would keep our mouths shut more, and we would open our mouths more and confront conflict and sin. But that also, just like everything else, comes at a personal cost because most people don't do it.
Yeah, you have to be transparent and willing. And that's where I think most people struggle with it is, you know, is also what we see in, you know, in the Gospels of, I shouldn't come and complain about your splinter because I've got a log in my own eye. And so I think sometimes we convince ourselves because we're non-confrontational, because we don't want to ruffle the, you know, someone's feathers, because we don't want to, you know, have this, we don't like the fear of being, you know, having retaliation coming against us or being fired or whatever the case might be, because I don't like that and I have my own problems, I'm just going to not say anything about, you know, whatever the situation is.
And then I want to make a balanced argument, which is I should have a fear of being fired. I should have a healthy fear of being fired, no matter what the job. I mean, if the reality is we've all heard, you know, you don't, it's not what you expect, it's what you inspect. And the reality is, when we're dealing with working and work environments and bosses and employees, we're going to do things that don't quite measure up to the standard of our boss or to the quality that the job demands. Sometimes the only way to hold people accountable is to say, well, if you don't measure up to the standard, then you're going to lose your job. Can you imagine a scenario in which a company was so like open door that every complaint, you know, we had a meeting for every complaint. You know, I don't like the way the kind of toilet paper we use. Okay, well, let's have a meeting and let everybody discuss their opinion. I mean, we've been in meetings like that, and it's just not productive. And so here's the thing. No matter what job you have, you're going to have to do some things somebody else's way. I had a boss in high school that it was a landscaping job, and we had to put a hole in the ground with the right hand, with the trowel, reach into the flat of flowers, and put the flower in the ground while you were putting the next hole in, like this, all day long, just like this, 12-hour days. But the only thing is, he didn't sit on his knees 12-hour days and do that. So when did you do that? When the guy came around, okay? You might be a little bit lax on the policy when he took off in his truck and drove somewhere else 15 miles away, all right? And that's... But the reality is, his way was stupid. But I had to do it his way because he wrote my checks. You know? And that's just sometimes you have to do that. You have to put
up with
stuff.
Tune in next week and we'll talk about that.
But, I mean, work is hard sometimes and it stinks. And you just have to do it. And whether you're working in an office, working in a ministry, working outside, you're going to have to, unless you're the boss, and you get to make all the decisions, you're going to have to do it somebody's way, and sometimes you just have to do it and keep your mouth shut.
One thing we haven't talked about is, and I'll be the one to say it, Falk, if she had just kept her mouth shut properly off social media, you wouldn't have the article. The whole reason why you put it on social media wasn't to fix the problem. It wasn't to voice a concern. It was to put your stuff out there and get the core of popular opinion on your side as some kind of leveraging. See how we're being victimized? Can you believe this? Now, right or wrong, should his employment be tied to her actions? That's a question to be asked. It's not like we're talking about the role of an elder or the role of a deacon, and to have the wives likewise type of speech patterns tied to it. But in the same essence, I mean, there's just some wisdom there. You know, certain things you don't need to air out in public. And there's other things that definitely need to not be hid. But even then, Facebook, Twitter, or whatever she used would not be the platform for it.
Yeah, I don't think there would be one single issue with the whole, hey, well, let's talk to her husband's first-line supervisor. We have some concerns about him coming back to work right now. There would have been nothing wrong with her getting involved in, or even if she asked a mentor or someone who, would speak into her life, my husband's job is expecting him to come back to work and we have some hesitation about, what do you think I should do about this? So it's not even that if she was asking for input, it's the format and the method of which she did that. That led it to, this is where it went from appropriate to inappropriate. Because that's where we've kind of crossed these lines of, we've gone from, I can't ask for clarification or expect a level of transparency in leadership to communicate why it is that they do certain things, versus I expect them to communicate everything so clearly and be completely conformed to my standards that they don't do anything unless I approve of it first.
And it's indicative of where we're at as a society, Brian. A lack of discernment to be able to separate and delineate things out and say, okay, this is good, but this isn't. This is appropriate, this isn't. That's the right platform, this isn't. It's completely shattered. We're a throw the baby out with the bathwater society. It's all or nothing.
And along those same lines, we also distrust people in authority to make those discerning decisions for us.
Correct.
We think that we can make every discerning decision in every aspect of my life for myself, when the reality is, that's not God's sovereign plan. God's sovereign plan is he put those in authority for a reason. They have a skill set that you don't have.
So should we define gossip for the listener?
How?
Yeah, it seems increasingly difficult to just put one sentence that's going to cover it.
Okay, you can have two.
I certainly don't agree with Dave Ramsey's that you can't be negative in any way, shape, or form.
It seems like there has to be a degree to which you're praying and asking the Holy Spirit to guide you, and that you're sensitive to the Holy Spirit as you're doing something. And it could be that you find yourself in the middle of gossiping and feel convicted about it and need to repent and move forward with a retraction or some type of a clarification. It just seems like it'd be very difficult to give us a textbook answer that meets all the criteria and then allows it to say this is and isn't gossip. Because we just read a 6-page article that I don't think did a good job. I think it just muddled the waters. I really don't think that it did much to help solve the problem. That's my... You looking at the definition, Steve?
Yes, from Webster's 1828 dictionary, and it's no help whatsoever.
All right, well, let's hear the unhelpful definition.
Well, that his first definition is a sponsor, one who answers for a child in baptism or a godfather.
That's a gossip?
Yes. 2, a tippling companion. 3, one who runs from house to house, tattling and telling news, an idle tattler. And then in brackets it has, this is the sense in which the word is now used. That was in 1828.
Third one was the best.
4, a friend or neighbor. 5, mere tattle, idle talk.
Tattle. So, you could probably put social media right there on that one who runs from house to house.
Right, yeah.
You're trying to get mass exposure. So maybe we could at least, include that in if we were going to form a definition of your objective, if you speak, it should not be for mass involvement.
So Oxford,
depending on the subject.
The Oxford Dictionary does this. Casual or unconstrained conversation are reports about other people, typically involving details that are not confirmed as true.
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting, and I always think of this verse, Proverbs 17, you know, a friend covereth a matter, a transgression. It's not even just like, you know, you've done something wrong. And I think one thing that might be used to decide whether you can do that is, does it impact only me? If a friend has sinned against me and it impacts only me, I can choose not to say anything about it. In fact, if I do, I'm being gracious and I'm showing the grace of Christ. But, that said, if it impacts another person, I think we need to think twice, especially when it comes to accusations of sexual abuse, physical abuse, and other types of things. I think those are the things where we need to be mindful that but then again, one part I do like about Dave Ramsey's thing, you take it to somebody who can make a difference. Mm-hmm. And but here's the catch with that is, like if the number two is going to cover the number one, then you can't obviously take it to them because you're going to get nowhere.
Right.
And sometimes the individual has no self-empowerment to know the difference. Like a five-year-old doesn't have that wisdom. So someone's going to have to speak on their behalf. And so sometimes it'll get wider than, so you can't just say, it's only this, you only do this.
I mean, even within our own organization, I mean, you know, if we use our academy, for example, if there's a lower school teacher that has an issue and they're a newer employee, they might go to an experienced teacher of the same grade, then go to, you know, if there's an elementary lead, or then they might need to go to then the elementary principal, and then the elementary principal would be involved, and then the elementary principal would then need to bring it to Jack as our head of school. And it could be before it even gets to Jack's ears, four different people have heard the matter so that it escalate, you know, so that it has been escalated, but it's also involving people that are necessary trying to help the issue.
Seems incredibly complex to try to define it.
Which, if that's the case, then we should for sure be just as thoughtful in how we share information. Because we can't just broad brush it and say that this is, all of this is gossip, all of this is not gossip. And so we should be very introspective with what it is that we say so that we know that we're not crossing a line that we should not be.
Sure, but in the heat of the moment, who can have that level of discernment and wisdom? The woman's husband was fired.
Well, yeah, I'm sure she's upset.
Yeah.
But it didn't the article also mention that it was a period of time, it was a month or so before he, you know, that he was fired?
Yeah, they worked through it, the normal HR process, I guess. I don't know who chose this article. Wasn't my favorite, that's for sure. Was it you, Nathan? Did you choose this article?
No, it
would have been from Desire and God.
About joy.
Yes.
Finding joy.
Yes, in which you're not gossiping then, right?
Mm-hmm. Or reading this article?
Yes.
I have more joy after this article.
Did you hear that article Brian picked out?
Yes. Don't gossip, please.
Yeah.
All right, listener, thanks for listening. We hope that you have been just as exasperated with this as we have been. And
I'm going to be going to the congregation being like, if I would have picked, it would have been a
bad
yeah.
You listen to
don't
that.
Don't do that. It's gossip, man.
Yeah.
Hey, look, when Nathan leaves in a couple months, it wasn't because of this article.
That's right.
That's right.
It's because of other articles.
Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.